Ladies and gentlemen, old ones and new, today's matchup promises the finest in exhilarating, electrifying, eldritch engagement. In this corner, ready to reveal the truth of the universe, Twilight Zone, and the challenger weighing in at 14 pounds soaking wet, Goosebumps. Turn up your hearing aids because this is Put Up Your Spooks!
This week's theme...
Grandparents.
Nothing scarier.
I mean, as we will see, we get a little bit of isolation, alienation, the familiar, and the strange. There's some stuff going on under the hood here. My name's Jeff. I'm repping the 90s.
Wrong. I'm repping the 90s, and my name is Ryan.
Oh, quite right. So I'll kick things off with an episode from the Twilight Zone, 1986, called Grandma. Now, this one makes a lot of the top 10 lists for scariest episodes.
Really?
Yeah, has a screenplay by Harlan Ellison, based on a short story by Stephen King from Skeleton Crew.
It was really interesting because it was written by Harlan Ellison, based on a Stephen King short story, and in reading about all the stories and stuff in the Stephen King bio, it was like one of his cited influences is Harlan Ellison. It's really interesting to me, and it must have been quite an honor for him to have Harlan Ellison adapt one of his stories
for the screen. That's very cool. So our story starts in an old-fashioned kitchen where a mom and a kid named Georgie, because it's a Stephen King story.
And Georgie's an author.
They're in Maine. The mom is in a tizzy. She's got to run out and take Georgie's brother to the doctor because he, like, broke his ankle in a baseball game or something. But the problem is that she then has to leave Georgie alone with Grandma. And she's worried. She's asking, you know, if he's going to be all right, because he used to be scared of Grandma when he was little. And Georgie's like, Mom, that was when I was a little kid. I'm 11 years old. It's totally cool. She's like, all right, you know, call the doctor if anything happens. So she leaves. Georgie is sitting there with a plate of homemade cookies and a glass of milk. And your first clue that something's up is Georgie gets up and dumps the cookies and milk and goes and gets a piece of chewing gum. Like, in what world does a kid dump a plate of milk and cookies? So he putters around the kitchen for a very long time. So long, in fact, that I was like, wait a minute. I timed it 3 minutes of puttering around the kitchen.
One of the things that his mom is adamant about is that if your grandma asks for tea, what are you going to do? And he's like, what do you think? I'm not going to make it for her. So one of the things he does while puttering is put water in a teapot. But I was like, man, there's not enough water in that teapot for tea. He only filled it for about 4 seconds. As an avid tea drinker, I know that you have to count to five for one cup of tea, not four.
Well, these could be smaller cups of tea. You know,
it was the olden days.
Yeah. So this kid is puttering around the kitchen for 3 out of the 20 minutes for the episode.
And doing just insane voiceover.
Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, it's just a kid alone at home. And he'll occasionally glance down the hallway and it's kind of hazy from the afternoon sun hitting the dust. And, you know, there's a little bit of trepidation, you know, okay, that's grandma's room down there. Hopefully I don't have to go down that hallway. But he's just kind of like walking inside and outside and puttering around the kitchen. And then a storm blows in and sort of covers up the sun. So things are starting to get a little ominous when all of a sudden a hideous gasping groan from grandma's room.
George!
Georgie stands at the end of the hall, and he has this, like, kind of freak out. He's sort of paralyzed, and he looks down at his shadow, and his shadow stretches out and then snaps loose and, like, slithers down the hall.
That was the first point where I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so we don't know if that was just in his imagination, like his mind is playing tricks on him, And it's almost like a Peter Pan type reference, right? Or we don't
absolutely bizarre.
We don't know if we're in straight supernatural horror, you know, when that happens. But Georgie runs and hides until Grandma, you know, starts loudly demanding tea over and over and over. And then Georgie has his first flashback to 4 minutes previous, where his mom said, after Grandma makes tea, you gotta go get it. So he gets the small pot of tea, fills the little teacup, and as he's making his way down the long, dark hallway towards the infamous Grandma's room, there's like this thundering voiceover, which I guess is all the things he's overheard his aunts and uncles say about Grandma.
Ruth, you have to take her. I've got kids. She scares them.
And how do you think Georgie feels? Every time she reaches out to hug him, he runs howling. Your kids, my kids.
It won't be for long, Ruth. She's totally blind and the hypertension, and God only knows how her heart can keep up with all that weight.
You know how to deal with her best, Ruth. You know how to shut her up.
Oh, how I treasure you, my dearest loving brothers and sister. You're turning me into a sharecropper in my own life.
She's more dangerous now that she's senile.
What makes you think she's senile? Just because none of the neighbors' houses haven't burned to the ground? Just because their dogs haven't come home lately with pieces of human meat in their mouths? Just because no babies have been born without fingers? Is that what makes you think the trail of evil has stopped?
The overlapping internal monologue and the snatches of arguments from the aunts and uncles are really confusing. Like, they lay it on thick. It's a bunch of different people we haven't seen or established. They're all talking really, really fast. And it's not a single argument from a single time. They're like overlapping arguments that is like a montage of like years of arguments. So it's kind of weird and off-putting and just sort of confusing. So Georgie goes in there. Grandma reaches her gross hand out. Georgie is so scared he drops the tea and runs. But the tea sank into the floorboards. Surely, Georgie reasons, there must be a hidden cache of cool stuff, and Georgie's gotta have it. He sneaks back in and he opens a hatch in the floor where the tea had spilled, and it's a hatch to hell. And it's full of all these crazy lights and wailing damned souls. And even though we've established that Georgie is a full-on scaredy cat and continues to be a scaredy cat for the rest of the episode, he does not hesitate to like reach both arms into this hellhole and sort of fish around. But she does have cool stuff. She's got some old books. Book one, Necronomicon. Georgie puzzles out some of the blasphemous tome before concluding that
it must be in some super secret ancient language, Arab or French or like that.
Which I thought was kind of funny. Book two is Grandma's Diary, which he speed reads in like, he flips two pages and instantly learns, oh yeah, so her babies all died in childbirth and she became a witch for Cthulhu.
That's dumb.
That's dumb, he says.
Right then, Grandma starts screaming out the forbidden names from Necronomicon, followed by a hideous death rattle. And Georgie's like, ah, dag, she's gone and died on my watch. I'm in it for sure.
He's like, that was a genuine death type rattle, that was.
He reluctantly goes back down the hallway. He grabs her grody monster arm and checks the pulse. And it's like, it's legit nasty.
It's a monster arm. I mean, no hyperbole there.
It's a giant, bloated, corpse-like arm with like hideous curved talons. He doesn't feel a pulse, so he holds a mirror up to her grody monster face to see if she's still breathing. Storming, there's lightning and thunder, and the whole thing is just a total freak show. But at the end of the day, she's dead. So now he's really panicked. The thing that he was most afraid of was that Grandma's going to die on his watch. He was going to be in trouble. So he FFOs and he tries to call the doctor. But his neighbor is on the party line, and even though he tells her, get off the damn hell phone, she's not budging. So he's sort of stuck in the house with his dead grandma and just knowing that it's all his fault. A new voice pops into his head, and it says, you've got to cover her face. It's a sacrilege if you don't cover her face. And I don't know who that voice was.
I think it was Abdul Alhazred.
Yeah, it could have been the Mad Arab. It could have been the doctor that he tried to call. could have been a father or an uncle.
Could have been his encroaching madness.
We don't know, but whatever it is, the voice convinces Georgie, gotta make the trip one more time. So he creeps back in down the hall, creeps back into the room, and then Grandma grabs him with her monster arm, and her eye pops open, and it's all red and monstery. And this is like our first sort of confirmed monsterization we've seen. You know, everything else has been sort of covered in shadow or alluded to with creepy voices. But no, she's a full-on monster. And so he breaks free and he tries to run out. But then she uses her mind powers to slam the door shut, yank him back onto the bed. And then she sucks him inside her bloated belly. Later, things settle down. Mom gets back and finds Georgie sort of slumped at the kitchen table, kind of moping, and he says, Grandma died. You know, she's not upset with him. She comforts him and pulls him to a hug and says, you know, it wasn't your fault. Don't worry. Grandma will always be with us. And then Georgie's eyelids open to reveal a red monster grandma eye. The end.
We've talked about how Twilight Zone 1986 was a bit calmer, a bit more poetic, a bit nicer. This wasn't.
I specifically went to find a counterexample because our last two episodes of Twilight Zone were pretty chill. And you were like, oh, I love it. The stakes are low and everyone's so friendly. And I was like, fuck that. I got to ref the 80s.
I couldn't figure out what was happening until he pulled out the Necronomicon. I was like, when he dropped the tea on the ground, it was like sizzling and smoking. So I was like, oh, does she have to drink some sort of weird acid concoction in order to stay whatever beast lives within?
It was such a voluminous amount of boiling vapor coming out of that spilled cup of tea. I also thought, like, oh, the tea is so important. Maybe it's an herbal poultice or something that does keep her sedated, or is like, there's something magic about the tea. But now the tea was had sort of nothing to do with anything.
And then I was like, I was trying to work it out. I was like, okay, well, what is this? Like, okay, it's a weird grandma with a monster arm and a monster voice in a bed. Is she a big bad wolf that had like taken over the grandma's life and was like controlling the family?
You know, if he had gone to stay with her, that would have been a really interesting sort of retelling of the little Red Riding Hood story. But because she's always been there, I don't think it works quite as well. One of the themes of Lovecraftian horror is family secrets. And so, you know, it makes sense that there's this sort of hideous dark heart at the center of this family, and they're all guilting each other into who's going to handle the responsibility. You could have told a fine story about the mom and the aunts and the uncles dealing with it, but to go one level deeper and just have a young boy who's in the house alone, you know, who sort of has overheard bits of it, but he doesn't really know all that stuff. It's kind of interesting.
He knows nothing, and the mom is wildly neglectful, leaving him alone with Cthulhu Grandma.
The first time I saw this episode, it freaked me out. And I just realized that I was the exact same age as Georgie when I saw it. I also kind of looked like him, a lot like him, and continuing to stay personal, I had a grandma who would come and stay with us. Or, you know, sometimes we'd go and stay with her. And it was always, like, really tense and scary. She wasn't a grandma that we saw constantly. She was pretty eccentric. She would do the Abe Simpson thing where she would fall asleep on the couch with her mouth open. And we wouldn't know if she was alive or dead. She was pretty ornery. And she had this fat little dog named Jingles that she carried around and, like, just overfed. And Jingles was mean. And it was like the kind of dog that would like bite you. And so the whole thing was really stressful. And I think that all kind of tied into my terror about being left alone with Grandma.
I want to hug you, Georgie.
The Twilight Zone staff was really bummed when they found out that they were supposed to adapt this story. They're like, this is impossible. It's all internal monologues.
First of all, Georgie is played by Barrett Oliver, who is Daryl from a movie I just forced you to watch recently. He's also in my favorite movie of all times, The Neverending Story. He plays Bastion. Barrett Oliver was not the greatest child actor. He did his job adequately in Neverending Story. In this, when he's actually physically acting and speaking, he's fine. He does a pretty good job, and especially when he's like screaming at the party line to like get the fuck off the phone because he needs to call the doctor.
The damn hell phone.
Get off the damn hell phone! It's gone! My grandma's dead!
But all of the voiceover is pretty atrocious, and I almost wish they didn't have any of that. Like, several times I was like, this would be great if we were just getting these interesting shots of, you know, the sizzling tea and the portal and all that shit. If we were just seeing it rather than like hearing his weird voiceover about it, it would be much more atmospheric and less comical. But at the same time, Cthulhu mythos is all about the mind and going mad and stuff, so maybe it was necessary.
I prefer a lighter touch with mythos stuff. You know, it would have made sense within the world of the story for him to retrieve the books. A, you would see the cover or the title or the, you know, you could show him tracing his finger over the words, but he could also read aloud. You know, that would make sense for him to do. I think a competent actor could show through blocking, body language, facial expressions, the internal conflict. But I just don't think Barrett Oliver was able to pull it off.
Yeah, he didn't really have the chops. But I think you could have shot around it pretty well.
I think that would be fascinating.
From a purely writing standpoint, this was a short story released in 1984, and it was released in 1986. And it's a very H.P. Lovecraft-ish cosmic horror story, but it's not overtly H.P. Lovecraft, whereas this episode was, like, you know, all over it, like you said. And it's kind of interesting to see Stephen King, like, kind of starting to play with those ideas.
Yeah, when he makes it his own, he creates this sort of Lovecraft-adjacent concept, which is the outer darkness, and it's where these old god entities reside. And they're sort of operating in the background of all of his cosmic horror. And it, aka Pennywise, is one of these outer cosmic entities, along with the turtle and some other things. I think there are characters from the Dark Tower that sort of overlap with Lovecraft mythos, but it none of it is overt. Yeah, it's very cool.
Hi, Georgie.
Which leads us cleanly to my episode, which happens to be, listeners beware, Goosebumps. The Scarecrow Walks at Midnight. Jody and Mark are like two youngsters coming to stay with their grandparents for the summer, as they do seemingly every summer. But this summer, right off the bat, something's a little off. The first thing Mark says to his grandpa is, "Are we gonna go get some frogs? I can't wait to go get some frogs." And grandpa's like, "Yay, let's do get some frogs." But then Stanley the farmhand says,
"No getting frogs for you. I like them frogs. You shouldn't be getting them."
And then grandpa's like, yeah, no frog catching tonight.
So Stanley is like, "I like them frogs. You better not get them frogs or the scarecrows will get you."
That's right. He does. He name drops the scarecrows immediately.
The kids roll up with Stanley the farmhand and Stanley's son, and they all pile out of the same truck. And so at this point, I think Stanley the farmhand is their father.
Is their dad.
And the big kid is like their punk older brother, not the farmhand's son. And I was so confused for so long.
You know, there's a storm a-brewing, so they can't go out and catch frogs because it's almost upon them. So the storm descends. Everyone's, like, getting ready for bed, and Grandma and Grandpa are, like, freaking the fuck out, going to every window. Grandma's like,
"Are you sure? Are you sure you locked the doors?
Don't you think they're locked?
The windows. Did you bolt them shut?"
And Grandpa's like, now, Mama. The scarecrow's just blown off its post. Sure enough, there is a missing scarecrow out there in the fields, but he convinces her, and they go off to bed, and then a scarecrow starts knocking on the window. So the, you know, Mark and Jody are in bed, and they're like, well, that was a little bit of a weird night, but at least we get Grandma's famous chocolate chip pancakes tomorrow. Woo!
And then the kid sort of cries himself to sleep while stroking the pillow and going, "Frogs, frogs."
Morning comes, and they race down the stairs. Woo, chocolate chip pancakes! And Grandma's like, "Here's your bowl. cereal, and they're like, "Aw, what about your famous chocolate chip pancakes?" And Grandma says, "Oh," and then Stanley's like, "Grumble, grumble." And Grandma's like, "No chocolate chip pancakes tonight, kids. I forgot chocolate chips." And they're like, "Gee, that's weird." So they go out to play baseball, and Mark chucks the ball out into the cornfield. They find the ball, and then they're looking up at this, like, creepy-ass scarecrow up on its post, and it's creeping them out, and Stanley jumps out from the bushes, and he's like, "Hey, what are you doing? Blarg!" And they're like, "Jesus." Stanley's like, "You gotta watch out, or the scarecrows will get ya. I made him walk one time, so's I did." And they're like, "Shut up, Stanley. Scarecrows don't walk. They're not real." And then the scarecrow kicks Jody in the face, but then it's just Sticks, which is Stanley's son. And he's like, "Haha, you city kids, you're so easy to scare." Being a real dick about it.
Yeah, Sticks is like immediately on their case, and he's like, "City kids don't belong on a farm. City kids will leave the farm if they know what's good for them."
Even though they've been staying in the farm and they've known Sticks for years.
Yeah, and they've known Stanley, the farmhand, for years too.
So they walk away. They leave the corn, I guess. They go to bed that night, and it's another windy evening. Mark and Jody are talking about, "Geez, something weird's going on. Everything feels off. Grandma never forgets her chocolate chips." And they're like, "Well, whatever, let's turn in." So Mark goes to close the window, and the scarecrows are like, just giving them the evil eye. They're like swinging around on their posts, whipping their heads back and forth.
Yeah, they're kind of working their posts like stripper poles out there.
And Mark's like, Jody, the scarecrows are moving. Jody's like, "Fuck off, Mark. I need my beauty sleep." And then she goes out and looks, and she's like, "It's just the wind. Remember, Stanley's crazy. He's a little slow." He also says pigeons like nail polish or something.
Pigeons like their toes polished?
That makes no more sense than the time he said pigeons like their toenails polished.
So they go to sleep, and in the middle of the night, Jody wakes up. She hears a little sound, and it's a grandpa scarecrow on the attack. She tries to run away out her bedroom door, but there's a grandma scarecrow there, and she's like, "No!" And then it's just a dream.
Womp count. One.
So she goes, she rests her head back on her pillow, but there's a sinister shadow just outside the bedroom, which retreats. So the next day, they're playing hide and seek. There's like some rustling in the corn, and Jody's getting a little freaked out. So she runs off to the barn, goes up in the hayloft. She thinks maybe Mark's hiding up there, but then Sticks jumps out of the hay, and Claire falls backwards off the hayloft. Luckily, she only falls like a foot to the ground and doesn't break her neck.
Or fall on a pitchfork or something.
Or one of those spiky scarecrow head mounts, which are sharpened sticks. And Sticks is like, "Fuck you, city kid." And she's like, "Sticks, I'm going to get you. You're always trying to scare us." They cut to the living room a bit later, and Stanley walks into the living room, like, clutching his stomach. And I've watched the episode like 3 times, and every time I'm like, "Ooh, Stanley's got bad diarrhea."
Yeah.
And he's like, "That was a fine meal."
Yeah, it's upsetting.
So it's after dinner, and Grandma brings around some pie, and the kids are like, "Cherry pie? But you always make apple pie, and that's Grandpa's favorite." And then Stanley's like, "Cherry pie is my favorite." And Grandma's like, "Cherry's a nice change." And as usual, I'm trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. At one point, I thought maybe Stanley and Sticks were dressing like scarecrows to terrorize the family.
Scooby-Doo style?
Then I thought maybe somehow Stanley and Sticks body swapped with the grandparents, and the grandparents are using the younger bodies to, like, control the older bodies. I didn't know what the hell was happening.
Be worthy of an Are You Afraid of the Dark? Sort of just madness. This one is much more well plotted.
They eat their cherry pie, and Jody's like, "Tell us a story, Grandpa. Make it a super terrifying one." Grandpa's like, "Gee, let me think. A real corker." And Stanley's like, "I don't like those stories. They make me a scared." And Grandpa's like, I'm all out of stories," and he walks away depressed.
And then Stanley has explosive cherry pie diarrhea.
So the kids are riding their bikes the next day through the corn, and they're like, I'm going to beat you to the creek. No, I'm going to beat you to the creek. And then Scarecrow attack. A Scarecrow launches itself out of the corn, grabs Jody, rips her off her bike, throws her to
Body
the ground.
Body slam onto the hard-packed earth.
And then they do the Goosebumps thing that I hate, which is they cut to commercial break, and then when they cut back, it's a very clearly... a dummy that she just easily throws off, and it weighs 1 pound.
Yeah, except she and her brother are completely coated with dirt from where they fucking ate it off their bikes. And like,
Mark's got a sprained wrist.
Mark's like limping, and Sarah's concussed. And I was like, damn, Styx is going hard at these city kids.
She's like, Styx, Jesus Christ. And then Stanley comes out of the corn and he's like, what are you guys doing here? It's dangerous to walk at midday. And he's like, get out. They're trying to get their bikes. And he's like, leave the bikes. I'll get them later. And Jody stays behind and she's like, I'm going to get you, Styx. And she kicks the Scarecrow head away. And then she turns around. And the second her back is turned, it tilts down and the Scarecrow is gone. It's like Jason rules. It's like the impossible teleport vanish on these Scarecrows. Jody decides she's going to get revenge on Styx, so she puts Mark in this Scarecrow outfit and tells him to wait out in the corn. So Jody goes to Mark's trailer or whatever. She's knocking on the door, and then the Scarecrow sort of meanders in friendly fashion out of the corn. And she's like, Mark, get back in there. You're going to blow the shock. But then it's actually a real Scarecrow, and then it reverts to, like, Scarecrow, you know, limping and, like, tries to grab her. And Styx comes out, and he's like, oh, shit. Get inside. He, like, throws rocks at it, and he's like, get on with you. Get on.
Doesn't he knock its head off?
Oh, yeah. He, like, whomps it with a stick and knocks its head off. And they go inside and slam the door, and he's like, well, so here, it's like this. My dad found a book of magic spells, and he brought the Scarecrows to life, and he just wanted to live like a boss. He told your grandparents he'd put them back to sleep if they did things his way for a while. You know my dad. He's not a bad guy. And never once does Jody think, like, oh, fuck. My brother's out there in the corn with with these murdering Scarecrows. So then Stanley kind of like walks around the corner clutching his magic book, and Styx is like, Dad! And Stanley's like, whoa! And he runs out into the corn. They follow him into the corn, and then Mark comes out of the corn and is like, blarg, blarg. And Stanley's like, ah! And he runs away all by himself until he realizes that he's surrounded by Scarecrows up on their posts. So he starts reading from his book a spell to, like, put them all to sleep, but it's the wrong spell, because he's Stanley, and it wakes them all up, and they come off their posts, and they're coming to get him. Styx and Jody, they come, and they grab Stanley, and they all run away. Mark and Jody are kind of, they get separated, they get lost in the corn, they're freaking out, they don't know which way to go. A Scarecrow reaches out from under the stalks and trips Jody, and she takes another spill in the dirt and gets another faceful. But then she turns and looks, and the Scarecrow is kind of like reaching out to her and like trying to say something. And I was kind of like, oh, are the Scarecrows actually forlorn in some way? Are they like asking for help? Are they not evil? But that's not the case. They chase them all into the barn. Styx is like, okay, they're gone. And then immediately, of course, the Scarecrow smash through and grab them, give them a chokehold.
Yeah, up until then, they're like ripping the Scarecrow's arms off and knocking their heads off. And it's like, oh, they're just made of loose straw. They're creepy, but they can't actually hurt you. And then they start busting through the walls, and that was pretty cool.
So they're like, what are we going to do? We don't know. We're all going to die for sure. And then the Thresher starts up and absolutely demolishes all the Scarecrows.
And nearly demolishes the people as well.
First of all, they're like, Dad, you read the wrong spell, you idiot. And he's like, well, I don't know. I can't read no more spells. I don't know the spells. And so the Thresher starts up and demolishes all the Scarecrows, and they're like, oh, that was one sticky situation. And Mark is like, yeah, I finally got to drive the Thresher after all, because he wanted to. That was like one of the... they actually set that up. It was Chekhov's Thresher.
Set up and payoff.
Balance is restored. The Scarecrows are defeated. They're having apple pie around the fire or whatever. And Stanley fucking meanders in, finds a page on the floor, and instantly Pate Dui Dambala's it and brings the Thresher to life. Up until that point, I was like, does this spell that he found only bring Scarecrows to life? What about all the other inanimate objects around? And I guess my question was kind of answered. Whatever spell he found on the floor brings Threshers to life and presumably killed them all. The end.
Yeah, the last shot we see is of this giant threshing machine plowing straight towards the family who are watching paralyzed in horror. And I was like, oh, snap. Goosebumps didn't come to play. went around. Dark. It was dark.
The scarecrows might just end up catching you.
Let's jump into ratings while it's fresh in our mind. Body count for Grandma. I'm going to say one because Grandma's body died. The scarecrow walks at midnight. Definitely some scarecrows got destroyed. So I'm going to give it a 0.5. Scare factor for Twilight Zone. I'm going to go high.
You remember your scare experience from childhood.
I remember it putting up its spooks quite effectively when I was a tender age of 11. Scare factor for Goosebumps, I'd say pretty high, but just not as high.
Yeah, it was cool. A lot of it during the day, but the real salient beats happened in the nighttime.
Yeah, I mean, the daytime was sort of the building tension and suspense, investigating mystery, and every night you're, you know, running through the cornfields being chased by scarecrows. It was pretty awesome. Good isolation in both episodes. Gross factor for Grandma, high.
Yeah.
Did you catch the glimpse of her face in the bolt of lightning?
I don't remember.
She had this, like, huge, warty melon head, full-on monster, and, you know, getting sucked into your grandma's stomach.
Yep, upsetting.
Gross factor for Goosebumps?
Cherry pie. Ugh. Just kidding. It's fine.
Stanley waddling around with
diarrhea factor.
A gut full of cherry pie. It's kind of gross. All right.
Less gross.
Yeah. What the factor for Twilight Zone?
Within like 4 to 5 minutes of the episode, I literally said out loud, "What the fuck?" And I think it was the shadow part. So I was like, "Oh, got to give it a high what the factor on this one."
Okay. Goosebumps?
I do still think it had a what the factor because, again, I was trying to figure out what was going on between the grandparents and Stanley, but I don't think it was as high.
But it was meant to be mysterious.
Well, that's true.
It wasn't like, oh, I understand it, and it's still perplexing. Vink factor for Grandma, I would say low, but not zero. She was a gross old monster person. You
know, dark arts.
Dark arts. She didn't have...
Kind of a sorceress.
Didn't have a lot of jobs, but she was definitely...
She had no energy, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Unless you count psychic energy.
Vink factor for Goosebumps.
I don't think there was really any Vink factor in there.
A theme of grandparents.
So they both had grandparents featured heavily, but yours, the focus was really the grandparent.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas mine, the focus was really scarecrows.
Yeah.
So I think I have to give it to Twilight Zone on that one.
Lesson learned for Twilight Zone. When you see your shadow fly away, it is time to go.
Listen to your inner monologue. Go with your gut, not grandma's gut.
Lesson learned for Goosebumps.
Don't mess with magic, I think, is the only lesson, really.
Mm.
Don't be a dick.
When in doubt, mow everything down with a thresher.
Yeah, destruction. Human tools are stronger than magic.
Okay, worlds collide. Grandma versus Stanley. They both have spell books.
What is the criteria for this category? Is it just how well did they overlap, or
no, it's
who did it better?
If they do overlap,
AVP sort,
yeah,
of.
Exactly.
Oh, I see. Okay, then. Oh yeah, I mean, yeah, grandma for days. Even when she's dead, she's still highly effective.
A crushing victory for what many claim to be one of the scariest Twilight Zone episodes ever.
And a crushing blow to my delight at the mellowness of Twilight Zone 1986.
And that is the true victory.
Be still, Grandma! Lay down!
Come here, Georgie.
Even though we started this journey thinking about grandparents and grandparent adjacent horror, I was so taken by the scarecrows. You know, scarecrows, I think they're underrated. As monsters.
They're compelling antagonists.
Yeah, I think they're really underused as spooks. And it struck me as kind of funny that we created something to scare away birds, but we also accomplished making something that scares people as well.
They scare people more than they scare birds, I would say.
Yeah, you're probably right, which is why they've switched to like remotely detonated firecrackers and ribbons of Mylar that just kind of swing in the breeze and make birds skittish. I have some facts about scarecrows. Fact one, the oldest surviving book in Japan, Kojiki, tells of an all-knowing Shinto deity in the form of a scarecrow. Fact two, the Japanese village of Nagoro has 35 residents, but more than 350 scarecrows.
Is that the one where the old lady, like, just started making scarecrows to fill out the town when the population started dwindling.
That's the one, the infamous Doll Village. Shit. But they started as scarecrows.
Can you imagine a couple of decades hence, population of Earth has diminished, and like you stumble upon that Doll Village and you don't know what it is, and you're like going into the auditorium and there's like all these tableaux of dolls like playing basketball or whatever, and then you go to the post office and there's like a post office doll like behind the counter like waving at you. That'd be the creepiest thing on the planet. Somebody ought to make a movie about that place.
Yeah. I mean, it's listed as one of the scariest destinations for sort of like horror tourism. Factory, here are some names for scarecrows around the world. If you hear one you like, and you want to know where it's from, I'll tell you. But the list of names is Hodmedod, a Mermit, a Hayman, a Gallybagger, a Taddy Bogle, a Mommet, and a Mawkin.
It must be in some super secret ancient language. Arab or French or like that.
So, you know, did you relate to the characters in Goosebumps going to hang out with the grandparents?
I did. You know, as we've discussed on 6DB, every summer for at least a week, I would go and stay with my grandpa and go fishing on the boat. We'd go get ice cream. My cousin, for some reason, left his Atari in the basement, so we'd play E.T.
Oh, that's awesome.
We'd play the infamous E.T. on the Atari. He could be crotchety, too. Like, one time, this is more a me thing, but I was like, he was making a burger or some ramen noodles or something, and I was like, oh, he must be making lunch for himself. I'm not hungry, so I'm not going to ask for any. And he didn't say anything, and then he put the food in front of me. And in my brain, I was like, well, it's okay, because I thought he was making it for himself. And I was like, oh, I'm not hungry, Grandpa. And Grandpa, you know, was like a World War II vet and lived through the Depression and all that shit. So he was furious. He threw the food and the plate in the garbage because he was so furious at me for wasting food, and rightfully so.
Wow.
And I tried never to waste food again.
Yeah. I mean, when you're a kid, you're used to certain norms and standards around food based on whatever is typical in your household. And it's not until you're eating meals with other people that you find out that there's different ways to have food, make food, different attitudes around food. One of my most intense memories at a family gathering was I had mentioned to one of my grandmothers that I liked bananas, or I think it's I had gone to visit once and there was a banana and I had it as a snack. And so we were at a larger family gathering and my grandmother brought over this like banana pudding dessert, and it was just as foul as everything I've described, except 10 times more so, because it was a stew of putrid brown bananas.
Aww.
And
poor grandma.
I took one look at that and I was like, uh-uh. And I wasn't a teenager, but I wasn't a kid. Okay. I was probably old enough to know better. I was right on the cusp and I was like, oh, I'll just do what I always do. If I don't like something, I'll just push it aside, or I'll spit it into a napkin, or I'll just, you know, run down to the basement, see if there's E.T. on the Atari. And I remember my uncle grabbed me and was like, if we have to eat this, you have to eat this. Sit down, shut up, and smile. And I was like, oh, no escape. And I remember choking down this cold, quivering, slimy, putrid banana mush while everyone in my extended family glared daggers at me because I mentioned to my grandmother that I like bananas.
Oops.
Never again.
I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Never again.
Oh, you want it, don't you, Georgie? Oh, of course you do.
I wonder what would happen if we combined the spells from my episode with the spells from your episode. I think we'd get a Crowthulu, and it might sound a little something like this.
That's dumb.
Eh?
Rerun for your lives!